Tom Woods Show, episode 2005.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. Today, we're joined once again by our old friend Phil Labonte, who is the vocalist for the metal band All That Remains. And I'm telling you, you got to follow Phil on Twitter. It's one of the great joys of being on Twitter. Michael Malice is one of those joys. Clifton Duncan, whom we had on several days ago, is another one. And Phil is another one. So you can follow him on Twitter at Phil That Remains. And you'll just, let's just say, I'm not going to spoil it for you. You're just going to enjoy the content he puts out. And then realizing that, you know, he's a successful musician and he actually has opinions different from the herd. Well, that will lighten your heart even more. And I want to talk to him just about politics, about music, about the new tour he's about to embark on with the band in 2022. So, Phil, welcome back to the show.
Hi, how you doing?
Well, lots happened since the last time we talked, that's for sure.
2,000 shows have happened. Not since last time, but 2,000 shows have happened for you. Congratulations on that.
Thank you very much. And congratulations to you guys finally having a chance to be back out on the road and celebrating 15 years of the Fall of Ideals album. Which,
it's coming.
Does that mean you're going to be performing it in its entirety?
Yeah, I think we're going to do the back to front. We haven't actually sat down and really discussed it, but we've all like talked about, you know, the tour and stuff. We haven't really sat down and solidified, but I think that we're all leaning towards doing like starting with the last song and then doing it backwards. So we'll do, you know, This Calling last, and I think that'll be cool and fun. And yeah, I mean, it's incredible that we're doing a 15-year anniversary tour for, you know, this record that's like, you know, on the cusp of going gold, which would be like, by the time people hear this, it'll be like our third gold record or something like that. So, you know,
that's, I mean, really amazing. I mean, it's a
pretty awesome.
I mean, it's a tough niche because it's not like country music, you know, where there are entire regions of the world where everyone who lives there just loves that.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a more niche kind of thing. So to have that kind of achievement is extremely impressive. Can you, by the way, I was trying to find this, and I'm probably going to be embarrassed by how simple the answer is, but I could not find doing a search. And I'm sure it's like, I hate asking people the same damn questions they get asked 24 hours a day. Like, I don't want to ask Ian Anderson, why do you play the flute? Like, I'm not going to ask that. But I am going to ask you something I'm sure you get asked. What is the meaning of your band's name?
It doesn't really have one. Like, it was, when we were trying to come up with names, I remember coming up with the name and going to the guys and I said, hey, what do you think of All That Remains? And they're like, yeah, that sounds cool. And then I did like a Yahoo search because I don't even think Google wasn't really even a thing in 1998, or at least it wasn't well known. And but I did some kind of search on the internet and there wasn't another band that I could find called All That Remains. And I was like, there you go. That's it.
Oh,
I'm
okay.
Taking it and claiming okay. It. And this was, you know, so it doesn't have some kind of deep meaning. It was just, I felt like all the cool one word names had been taken, like, you know, Slayer and
yeah,
you know, you know, Carnivore and all the cool one word names are kind of already eaten up with thrash and early 90s death metal. So I was just like, if it sounds all right, then no one else has it. I'm going to grab it. And since then, there's a band come out called We Butter Our Bread With Butter. And I feel vindicated in nabbing All That Remains because
you call your, right.
You know, no offense to the band or anything, but that's, you know, I don't know the story behind their name, but they're a metal band, and I'm glad that we didn't have to go down that kind of absurdist route to come up with a name for the band.
That's true. Yeah. Okay, well, thank God. I thought it was going to turn out to be something like, it's a Shakespearean reference, so I'll look like an idiot not knowing it. So I'm glad it was that. By the way, speaking of absurd, the other day we came across a sort of parody tribute band called Mac Sabbath. Have you ever heard of them?
No.
It's a Black Sabbath parody, but they make all the songs into being about McDonald's.
Perfect. Perfect. And do they dress up like Ronald McDonald?
Yes, they do.
As a rock star?
Yes, they do.
Good.
Yes.
Perfect.
It's unbelievable.
They have to.
And apparently Ozzy has seen them and says he thinks it's hysterical.
Ozzy's great.
Yeah. All right. So now you guys are back on the road. I'm really happy about that. I mean, you weren't the first people to announce a tour. Obviously, I guess the way they build it, Megadeth billed their tour as the metal tour of the year. And that I think was, it might have been postponed, but that actually went on in 2020. That took place.
Yeah. So I'm pretty friendly with Mark from Lamb of God. We're homies and we've done shows and stuff together and we kind of spar a little bit on Twitter, but he's a good dude. And he hit me up and he's like, hey, so just so you know, like we're going to do this tour and like we're all getting understudies, like the whole band. Like I guess there were other people that they'll remain nameless because I don't want to go ahead and say anything for people out of turn. But there were other people from other bands that people would know that would be filling in should someone in that band come down with COVID or something like that. And he'd asked me if I would kind of understudy for Lamb of God. So I had to learn their set and get ready just in case.
Oh, wow.
But the tour happened without a hitch. I don't think anyone on the tour had any kind of issues or anything like that. So thankfully, that was it was unnecessary because they maintained good hygiene and no one got sick, thankfully.
But that's extremely smart because, of course, we have seen not just shows but whole tours canceled. And that means losing an absolute fortune. I mean, when this whole thing first really gets started, there's a melodic death metal band that I kind of like called Insomnium, and they came over to the U.S. from Finland. They did one show in Philadelphia, and then everything else had to be canceled. And it was absolute financial ruin for them.
Yep.
So they turned to their fans out of desperation and said, if you could help us, it would be nice. And they raised a bundle of money. Like, I sent them a bunch of money.
Good.
And they're doing fine now, and it's great. But, I mean, they're trying to go out and entertain people, you know, and this happens to them.
If it had happened where everything got shut, if they'd have been on tour and nobody caught anything and they'd have done 3 weeks of the tour, they'd have been okay. Cause most of the bills they'd have made enough money to pay for.
Yeah.
But because they got here and right when it happened in the beginning, they had like even just to cover the flights in hotels and the bus in the beginning to start it off and then getting back, like you're talking about, you know, well into the five, possibly six figures just for your first week, you know?
Yeah.
Just get it off the ground. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've heard, because I guess there was going to be a Yes tour of North America. I think each of their members is like 107 by now, except the singer, who's a second generation guy. But they were saying that they were either canceling or postponing because it's impossible at this point to ensure the tour. So is it the case that a big band has to get some kind of insurance before they go out on tour?
I mean, I don't know. Normally, like, we have some kind of, you know, limited liability insurance. I don't know the details on the insurance policy. That's something that my business manager handles. So I know that we have some kind of insurance, but I don't imagine that it's, you know, it would break the bank. But then again, I don't know what they're doing, how many people are on their crew, what kind of regulations there are once you start getting into the, you know, having, because, you know, we roll with like 10 people on our crew, you know, and like it might be different if you got like 40 people on your crew or 50 people on your crew, like what your, you know, regulations are and the government being involved because we're a fairly small unit when it comes to actual touring. They kind of leave us be, you know.
All right. I've figured that. I was just wondering if all the uncertainty out there, I mean, it's got to be making at least some bands think twice, but at the same time, you got
to
eat.
I mean, we wanted to do the Fall of Ideals tour this year, but we got to do it and, you know, it doesn't start till March now. The anniversary is actually this year. Next year is, you know, actually not the anniversary anymore, but we're just like, we called it like the anniversary celebration and we're just celebrating like extending it into when the tour cycle was too, because we didn't do our first headlining tour for the Fall of Ideals until 2007. So we're just like, yeah, you know, 2022, it's 15 years after the first headlining. So there you go. That's the celebration, you know, trying to stretch it out because we didn't want to book anything and be like, oh, you know, you have a whole tour that gets canned and put all the work in and put all the effort in with the whole thing. It was bad enough that we had, you know, I think we had to bag three shows because Jason caught COVID, Costa. Oh, I think that's the first time that got out. Well, anyways,
Do you want to keep that in?
No, it's fine. One of our guys got COVID in September and we had to cancel three shows because, you know, you can't travel and you have to have a negative test before you can show up on site and play the show. So, you know, we got some shows in, but, you know, if we'd have booked a tour and that had happened, that's a It's a real kick in the old privates, you know. So you do what you can, and we're putting it off until next year, hope, you know, in the hopes that things will have kind of chilled out and stuff. So I'm thinking that all of the hubbub about what is going to be able to be mandated will have kind of blown over by then, whether or not there is or is not a mandate. I don't know, but I think that it will be decided as to whether or not the government thinks that it's allowed to, and the courts agree. And I think that by the time March rolls around, that kind of stuff will be decided. But we'll see. And I don't know. It's so tough to make decisions about what you're going to do, but you got to try. You know, you just have to kind of go ahead and make a plan and do your best. So,
but just for my own curiosity's sake, how do you decide which bands you tour with? Is that entirely a business decision that a manager would make, or do you personally reach out and ask people, or are there bands that not in a million years could you stand to be in the sight of them? How does that get decided?
Yeah. There are bands that we will or will not tour with, or you know, there are bands that we would like to and would not like to go out with. There's bands that you want to make it work, and sometimes just the scheduling doesn't work, and sometimes the situation with the band's management doesn't work out with your management or whatever, and you there's a million reasons that could get in the way. But generally, it just, you know, you send out a message to other promoters and say, hey, or I'm sorry, other booking agents, and say, hey, we're going out on tour to do a headliner. If you have bands that would like to go and be a part of this, shoot us an email and let us know. And then you select from the bands that have submitted. That's usually the easiest way to do it. And then you know that the people that want to go on tour with you are the people, or you know, the people that you're going to ask are going to say yes and stuff. But there are times where you're just like, hey, you know, you get in touch with bands that you're friends with or whatever, and you say, hey, what are you guys up to? Let's do this. And then, oh, okay, yeah. And then you tell your management to get in touch with each other and hammer it out that way.
I asked a bunch of my supporters, you know, what sorts of questions they would want me to ask you. And so there are a couple that I think I've asked you before, so I don't want to do those. But I'm curious to know, I'm kind of riffing off one of theirs, but sure. When COVID hit, and I mean, I guess, you know, obviously it was in China before it was here, but I mean, when it really got to here and to the point where we were seeing venues shut down, stuff like that. So March of 2020, has your opinion on all that and the response to it and, you know, what the arts should be doing during a time like this, has that changed between March 2020 and today? Did that evolve at all?
What do you mean the arts as in?
Well, I mean, like, know, performing arts, like you.
I mean, it hasn't really changed much, I don't think. I haven't been super against precautions that are recommended by, you know, whether it be the CDC or whoever. I haven't been like, oh, you know, I refuse to wear masks and I refuse to do this and I refuse to do that. My issue is when they start talking about mandates and start applying force and the government starts getting all governmenty and not voluntary. So I'm not surprised that the government is behaving the way that it has. I do think that it's a good idea. At the very least, I think that there should be people that are in positions like myself that at least stand, you know, speak out and say, look, you shouldn't be applying the boot of the police. At the very least, like, even I get it if you are a libertarian and you feel like the stand should be more aggressive, or you should feel like people should do more noncompliance. Like, I get it, and I'm there with you. That's all stuff that I agree with. But for your normies that don't know what I'm talking about when I say the Mises Caucus, yeah, like, for people that don't know that stuff, that don't know, you know, the difference between Harry Reid and the DSA, for those people, they should at least say, hey, you know, I don't think cops should beat people up because they're not wearing a mask. Like, that's kind of just civilized society. You know, you just don't violently attack people because they're not wearing a mask. So I think that there should be people in positions like myself that at the very least are saying, hey, the government shouldn't be causing harm to people. And that's something that I've been doing since day one, definitely. So,
well, I remember, I'm pretty sure I asked you last time you were on, I mean, you're pretty outspoken, and particularly on Twitter. I mean, I have never once regretted following you on Twitter. Your Twitter feed is so great and so hardcore.
Appreciate
you're
it.
You're not mealy-mouthed anyway. You are hardcore out there taking a position, and I just love it. I think I asked you, have your bandmates ever said, hey, Phil, knock it off? Or has, you know, management or anybody ever turned the screws on you? And I think your answer was no. Am I right?
Correct.
Okay.
Right.
Just because, now, obviously, this is a way different situation, but I know you don't know personally John Schaefer from Iced Earth, but of course, he was caught up in the whole January 6th thing. And after that, like, he was thrown out of Iced Earth. Hansi Kirsch from Blind Guardian said he's out of, he's not going to do Demons and Wizards anymore. And so his life was just completely ruined because, now, that's totally different from tweeting. I get it. But all the same, as you know, in the performing arts, and oddly enough, in metal in particular, it's like everybody's just expected to have the same opinion on everything.
Yeah, kind of. I don't know. I don't know that you're supposed to have the same opinion. I do know that there is a strong left bias in certain areas of the metal world, I guess. And those are areas that I try to avoid if I can. You know, I'm an individual rights libertarian kind of dude. I know that that is not the politically correct take, and I'm comfortable with that. And I only wish that there were more people that either would speak up or agreed with me in the metal community, because it's really kind of crazy to think how many socialists there are. And there's part of me that thinks that for a good portion of the people that are, again, fairly normies, but think, you know, that they're socialists, like, they really just want people to be taken care of by government. And not that I think that that can happen. Like, I don't think that that's the most efficient or the most effective, or I think that it's even something that we should aspire to. Again, when you're dealing with normies, I feel like you have to at least understand that they're normies and they don't get, like, they don't read philosophy. Like, their philosophy is, you know, The Simpsons or Colbert. Like, that's, like, that's as deep as they are, which is, you know, like a spoon. So I don't hate on normal people that, you know, don't get that taxation is theft and that the state is just, you know, violence, you know, the organization with the monopoly on violence. I don't hate on them for it, but I get
no, you sh- and neither do I, because it's a dumb thing to do and it's counterproductive. If I have an audience of at a university and they've never heard anything like the kinds of things I'm saying before, I use a lot of self-deprecating humor. I try to, you know, make it a little bit more accessible for them.
Tom Woods, you did radicalize me, Tom Woods. I've told you this before. You were the guy that exposed me to actual anarchists and Lysander Spooner and stuff. So,
well, that makes me happy. I appreciate that. But, I mean, I feel like I start, well, for example, one time I spoke to a group where I did know kind of where they were coming from, and it was not my kind of folks. Like, it was there was a solid minority of people there who were very, very supportive of current U.S. foreign policy. And I thought,
Neocon Central, huh?
Yeah, and I thought, well, maybe I shouldn't talk foreign policy in this talk. And then I thought, wait a minute. I mean, this is all going on in my head legitimately. Wait a minute. Would Ron Paul act like this? Well, you know, there are a lot of opponents in the audience, so I better keep my mouth shut. No, he'd talk about it even more. But the way I would do it is I spent the first half of the talk building up capital with them, you know, saying things that appeal to them. And then they get, okay, yeah, he's one of us. So then it's much more effective when I say, but you know what? You got to start thinking about this foreign policy question again, because they realize I'm not Hillary Clinton. And Hillary Clinton probably agrees with them on foreign policy, but you know what I mean? You know, they realize I'm not some monster. And then, so then they had to give it some thought. So that's, we do have to think about who the audience is. But when you're on Twitter, you're not making these careful distinctions. You are just slashing and burning at every opportunity.
It's just unfiltered kind of just what's coming out of my brain. I don't do, I've talked to people that, you know, we'll sit there and they'll agonize over a tweet. And I'm just like, man, if it takes me more than 45 seconds to compose a tweet, I'm probably not tweeting it. It's just like zoom, you know, just riffing them out there, you know, but.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, you are probably Now, I'll get some people complaining to me. I'm a musician and I'm also intelligent. But no, you are probably the only musician I would have on here. And I would just say, you know, so, you know, what's your opinion about the infrastructure bill? Or how do you feel about Joe Biden? And I know that I would get, you know, you would have things to say that I never even heard of or whatever. I mean, I want to retweet almost everything you do. And then I think that would be creepy. So I don't.
Well, you know, there's so much to be, you know, to be critical of, and considering, you know, Twitter is literally the comment section for life. And, you know, they say never read the comments because it's just filled with people complaining. That's what Twitter is. And so it's fun to get in there and just, you know, kind of throw mud and be, you know, silly and a little hyperbolic. And, or sometimes the best thing to do is just, you know, counter something as flatly and dryly as you possibly can, because the thing that's being said is so ridiculous. So, you know, sometimes the more crazy, and especially when it's earnest, you know, like people talking about climate change and they get all, you know, serious about it, and it's, you know, talking about catastrophes and stuff, and then you're just like, no, that is not going to happen. Sometimes the flat replies are the best, but it's fun to get in there and mix it up.
Yeah, sometimes you're right. Sometimes that is the best way to handle these things. Well, let me ask you this. If you're looking at, let's say, the near term, what would you say are areas where you think things are going badly? Like, you're pessimistic about the near term, but are there other things where you think maybe things are looking up, or maybe people are figuring stuff out or whatever? What do you think?
Short term, I'm very black-pilled. But long term, I'm pretty white-pilled.
All right, now let's flesh that out. I like that. Let's flesh that out.
Michael Malice is right. Like, in the end, the people that are, you know, quote unquote, the bad guys are dumb and bad. Like, they're not bright. They're not exceptional. That's why they're in government, is because they're not exceptional, is because, you know, they're mediocre at best. So that's why I'm white-pilled in the long term, but I'm black-pilled in the short term, because just because that's true doesn't mean they can't do terrible amounts of damage.
Yeah.
So that's kind of
your 5-year-old, you know, doesn't have a very high IQ, but can really wreck that living room.
Yeah, exactly. My dog, like, I didn't lock her up today, and I came home from going out just for an hour, and I had, you know, spent the last 25 minutes before our conversation here cleaning up a mess that she made, because she can destroy like nothing else. But I've never seen her put Legos together, not even two, you know.
No, that's absolutely true.
Zero building.
A couple of music kind of questions from my folks. So one guy says this: every band has its own way of making new music. And so he says, is there a specific way his band develops new music? What does that process look like? For example, I used to manage a metal band, and more times than not, one of the guitarists came up with a simple riff or two, let the guys hear it. The rest of the guys would tinker with it, come up with complementary parts, provide feedback to each other the whole time. Eventually, they'd have a good bit of the instruments ironed out, and then the vocalist would write lyrics that fit the sound. It didn't always come about this way, but that was pretty frequently the method employed. Well, how about with you guys?
That's literally the most common way that it goes with us. Like, we'll come up with, because we're a guitar band at our core, right? Like, I started the band, and I started by writing some guitar riffs, and I recorded those with a buddy of mine, and then, you know, put them together into what were almost songs, and wrote some vocals, and did that a few times, and then we had a 3-song demo that we recorded, and that's the way that it frequently goes. There's been a couple times where we've gone out of our way to do it in a different way, like a different, you know, formula, and tried to start with lyrics first or vocal ideas first. But for the most part, our stuff is guitar first, because, you know, we're a guitar band, and so many of the people that write riffs are, you know, they're writing from a guitar perspective, not from like a keyboard or piano or whatever perspective.
Do you ever have a sense, like, for example, when Yes released Owner of a Lonely Heart, John Anderson said, as soon as they finished recording it, I knew that was going to be a hit. I just knew it for a fact. So now, when you have a song like What If I Was Nothing or This Calling, do you just know, all right, this one is just going to kill? Like, everybody's just going to go crazy about this one. Or is it always a surprise?
When we have the good ones, usually I feel pretty confident. 2 weeks surprised the crap out of me. Like that I didn't expect. But like I wasn't shocked about the last time. I wasn't shocked about this calling. I wasn't shocked. Six surprised me, but that was because I think that was because it was in a video game, not just because of the song itself. That musical hook, that bridge hook is killer in there. So, but most of the time you can kind of pick out when you've got a killer song, or at least I feel like you can. And those tend to be the songs that you lead with, like your first single you want to lead with, either your best high energy song. Actually, yeah, that's pretty much it. You want your first single to kind of be like a high energy one, something that's aggressive and just high energy. You don't want it to be kind of like a too sludgy and down kind of vibing, or at least that's what's worked for us in the past. So, but yeah, usually we can kind of pick out the ones that we think are going to be good.
The internet in general, in terms of music, I can think of ways it makes it a lot easier for musicians, but I can also think of ways that it makes things much more difficult. So, for example, you know, in principle, the whole world can be listening to one of your songs at any given moment, just, you know, the click of a mouse.
Sure.
And you can spread the word about touring much more easily than in the old days, where people would have to stumble upon something. They'd have to be a member of the fan club, or they'd have to hear the ad on the radio or something. Whereas now they can just go to Google and say, oh, I wonder if this band is touring. So there's that.
There's a great app called Bands in Town that you can just follow a bunch of bands. You know what I mean? And it just sends you an email. Hey, these bands that you said you're interested in, they're on tour now, you know? So yeah, good. I think that's a great app. But yeah,
I get messages from All That Remains through that app, as a matter of fact, about things you guys are up to. And that was when I made fun of you about you came down for a big show with many bands in September. And I was saying, well, you know, it's still 137 degrees in Florida. And so the outdoor venues, I'm just not. You won't see me there until maybe November or something. But then on the other hand, this is a double-edged sword, because it means like any old guy and his band can now be distracting people from your band, because now there are a million YouTube videos and Spotify links and whatever with a whole bunch of brand new songs. So how do you think on net it all sifts out? I mean, net positive, net negative?
Yeah, I think it's a net positive, and especially for a band like us who have been around for, you know, 20 years now and have a fan base. Like, we know that we'll put out a record and there'll be, you know, a certain amount of people that are going to be listening to it on, you know, day one, and how many spins it gets. And we know that there are going to be people that'll be interested, and just as long as we don't, you know, put out a stinker, we know that there'll be people that'll be, you know, checking out our music and listening to it. So for us, with bands that have, you know, careers that have been around for a while, it's one thing. But for a new band, I imagine it's harder. But I don't know. I'm not sure what to do to, you know, to kind of circumvent that now. I imagine, you know, having a strong YouTube presence is important. A quality product is probably first and foremost. And then after that, you know, some kind of strong YouTube or internet presence. So things like TikTok, which is where most people are now, like most young people are on TikTok, it's probably a good idea to have one of those and be putting your music on there. And beyond that, I don't know how to really like work the algorithms and stuff like that. But I suppose doing that is as productive as, or doing that as best you can, you know, massaging the algorithms to get your stuff in front of as many people as you can. I think that's probably a good idea too.
Folks, let's take a brief moment for me to spread some happiness. What do I mean by that? Every month, and I checked, I subscribed August 13th, 2019. So every month for 2 years, I have received a piece of happiness in my mailbox. And if you want to be a hit with your significant other, you will follow in my footsteps. Now, what is that bit of happiness? It is the Happily Date Box. Every month, we get a box with a different theme inside, containing a music playlist and activities of all kinds and games and conversation starters that bring you closer together with your significant other. Sometimes it's competitive, sometimes it's cooperative, but it's always fun and relaxing. We've had boxes with an 80s theme, a Japan theme, a stargazing theme, all kinds of different things that help give us a special night together. Show your significant other that you value time together by checking out the Happily Date Box. And because you know old Woods, take 50% off your first date at tomwoods.com/date. I've sort of wondered about the effect that advancing age has on performance of really, really demanding music of the sort you guys produce. I mean, Jason is my age. He was born in, I guess, in 1972. I just checked. And now, okay, so I don't feel any different. Honestly, I feel this exactly the same as I felt when I was 25. But Charlie Watts just died, and he was about 80 from the Rolling Stones. But he played a very simple drum. He was not, he wasn't like the drummer from Rush who just had to dominate every single song.
Yeah.
He was keeping time. That was his job. Yeah. He was keeping time. So maybe into your 80s, you could continue to do that. But I look at some of these old metal bands that have been around forever with crazy, insane demands on the drumming, and their drummers are getting into their 50s. Where at some point, you have to, as a songwriter, you feel guilty making them do this. I mean, how is this? I mean, are some of them retiring? Are they just finding they're still able to do it?
I mean, some of them are, but then again, you've got like bands like Slayer. They just retired, and Kerry King's, they just retired. Like their last tour was like last year, I think. Either right before COVID started or right in the beginning or something like that. Maybe it was right before. And they're already complaining about, you know, Slayer retired too early and blah, 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 and screw this. If you stay in shape and you stay active and you keep doing stuff and don't allow yourself to not practice and not keep your, you know, keep the edge, you can do it. I imagine into your 50s or 60s, at least your 50s. I mean, Lars Ulrich is still doing it. Not that Lars Ulrich was all that great, but, you know, he's in the biggest band in the world, and he's still doing it. So,
All that crazy double bass. And stuff.
Yeah, like,
this can't. This has to be a machine. This can't be a person.
It could be, but, you know, I don't. Nobody would want to admit it.
No, I suppose so. But the thing is that I know it isn't because I've seen them do it with my own eyes right there in front of me.
Yeah.
Anyway, crazy. Who are you guys? Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that, like, you know, you can do things like get lighter drum pedals and stuff, but you still have to be able to move your feet that fast, you know?
Yeah, that's just crazy. So who are you guys touring with this time?
It's with Miss May I, Varials, and there's Tala. T-A-L-L-A-H.
Okay. Are you excited about this?
I'm super excited about this. This is going to be, it's going to be a big deal. There's a lot of buzz already. Tickets are already starting to sell. There's a lot of promoters that are calling up saying, hey, we're seeing a lot of interest. You guys, you know, are you guys going to be doing another leg? Is there going to be, you know,
are you going to
add shows and da 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 da? So, you know, and it's November, you know, this isn't until...
Right. Yeah.
March,
by the way, I'm going to tell my own story of trying to get tickets for your show, which I did eventually get them. But I don't want to say the exact venue because I don't want all these Woods people showing up harassing me during the show. but let's just say one of the Florida shows. And I like to get, it's one of these things where there's general admission, you know, where, you know, everybody's standing around, but then there is a second level with some seats. I like to get a couple of seats up there just to have a home base.
Yep.
You know, it's like, you know, in between sets, I have somewhere to sit, whatever. I just want that. But then I do want to kind of be down on the first floor with everybody.
Sure.
So I was looking at that and I was about ready to pull the trigger. And there was I don't know what the problem was on my phone, but it just wouldn't let me buy them. And they were more expensive than I've certainly for the Machine Head seats I got up there. So I thought, all right, well, good. Phil's doing well for himself. That makes me happy. That's good. So then when I finally was able to sit down in front of a computer and place the order, they were all sold out up there and I had to just get the schmuck general admission down the floor.
Well, so, let me tell you something, Tom. I know a guy that's going to be at that show and he can help you out.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I mean, by the way,
welcome.
I'm so happy to just be in the building. Honestly, after what we went through in 2020, I am just glad to be there, period.
Right, just gone doing human being things.
So where does the tour kick off?
It's going to start March 12th. Yes, Saturday, March 12th, we're going to be playing at the Worcester Palladium in Worcester, Massachusetts. So that's like home base for us. So we're going to start it there, and then we'll go... Then it's Vermont, New York, Ohio, Michigan, Cincinnati, Columbus, Fort Wayne, Sauget, East Moline, Joliet, Green Bay, Minneapolis, Sioux City, Dubuque. I mean, then it goes all the way until what is the last show in Hartford, Connecticut on the 20th of May. So it's over 2 months. It's crazy to think that it's over 2 months and there's already other venues that are like, hey, are you going to add more shows?
So. That is tremendous. Now, there was some worry that Eric July expressed on the show that some of the venues where his band has performed might not, you know, we were talking in 2020, when 2021 rolls around, they might not be there anymore. Have you guys run into that problem?
I mean, that's a reasonable thing to think because there are a lot of venues that I've heard that were closing down. There were festivals that we had done multiple times and had a great relationship with that closed down, Country USA and Rock USA being two of them, I think. But yeah, so hopefully things have kind of, you know, chilled out and there won't be other venues closing. But that's definitely something legitimate to be concerned with. I don't know what's going to happen over the next 6 months. But I do think that if people are booking shows this far, like if they're calling us and saying, hey, we want that show or whatever, at least the venues themselves expect to be open, you know?
All right. Well, that's good. Well, one last thing. And I mean, this is kind of a nosy question that you don't even really have to answer. But I once heard Steven Wilson say that when his old band Porcupine Tree or he himself solo would tour, that the expenses are far greater than you could possibly imagine because no one's thinking about that. No concert goer is thinking about, gee, it must really cost a lot to house and feed all the crew and do, you know, it never even crossed anybody's mind. So he says that the expenses were so great that he made his money not on the ticket sales, but just on the merchandise. So how heavily does that factor into your financial model?
So we run really, really, really lean. Some bands need to have multiple personal assistants, and each band member has a tech. Each individual band member has a tech, and then there's a stage manager. Like, we don't run very, very deep. Like, we're not super needy, and I'd rather make money. So we do have the band getting paid is figured into the budget. So whatever we make on merch is bonus, but like we actually budget our tour so that way the band actually is getting paid like right away. Because I'm not like we can't go on tour and be like, oh, we don't know what we're gonna make. We're just like, no, we're gonna go ahead and we're capable of doing the budget like that and making the show work and making sure that we're putting on the show that we should be putting on for people. So we get paid.
Did you make a conscious decision this time not to do VIP tickets, like with a meet and greet because of COVID or anything like that?
Yeah, we're not sure what the rules are going to be. And I have a feeling the rules are going to be different per venue, different states. So we're going to do that. We'll figure something out, some kind of VIP stuff. But it's not something that we're going to do in advance just because, again, we don't know what's going to happen. I don't want to have people that are, you know, bought something and then not get what they were expecting to get. So we're just like, you know, don't do it because we don't know what's going to happen.
Now, I know Michael Heiss, who's, you know, the creator of the Mises Caucus.
Yeah.
He is definitely going to your show. I've heard all kinds of talk among Mises Caucus people who also happen to be fans of yours. They're all going. I'm going. So let me just say to the Tom Woods Show audience, the cool people, can you believe this is the first time in my life, Phil, I've considered myself part of the cool people. It's never happened before. The cool people are going to come see you on this tour. So if you want to be part of that group, you've got to go get tickets. So I assume, I mean, obviously they can go to, you know, various ticket vendors online, but you'll have the whole list at allthatremains.com, I assume?
Allthatremainsonline.com.
Allthatremainsonline.com. My mistake. I remember that now. Allthatremainsonline.com.
Yeah, if you go to allthatremains.com, that is something to do with Palestine, and that is not us.
Oh, no, that's not. Okay, that's not older. Us. I'll have to get Scott Horton on for that topic. Okay, all right, fine. All right, well, anyway, as I say to everybody, I'm going to be there. I want you guys all to be there. And not just because we agree with Phil politically or anything like that, but you're going to have a great time. We were all stuck in our houses during 2020. It's life-affirming to be at a metal show. You're just going to love it, okay?
And you know, it was really, really enjoyable. I don't remember if I listened to you describe it or if I read it somewhere on Twitter or somewhere, but you describing your first venture out to an actual restaurant when you were able to again. That, that was an enjoyable read. I remember how you just really were like, I miss restaurants so much.
Yeah. And we're looking around at the other patrons like, are we even really supposed to be here?
Is this real?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But we went out and did it. So also as your homework assignment, everybody, you should go get the album that whose 15th anniversary they're celebrating. I mean, we won't point out that it's 16th. We'll say 15th anniversary. All That Remains album, The Fall of Ideals. So you should check that out. And you may say to me, Woods, I don't know if I go for the harsh vocals. Okay, but you got plenty of clean vocals on there too. And that will ease you into, because it turns out that these are the only vocals that work for this music, okay? You have to have it. I was resistant too. And then I realized I was just being a doofus who didn't understand it.
Okay? Isn't it nice the way that like the clean vocals do kind of ease you in? It's like you're like, because when I was getting into heavy music, that was the same thing for me. That the really deep guttural stuff, I was like, I don't know if I dig this. And I found something that was just a little bit less, just a little more easy to understand. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. And it was still kind of a gutturally growl, but it was something that I could kind of sink my teeth into a little bit better. And then it was like the doorway. And then I was like, okay, now I can deal with it. So.
Well, then I went through this phase, Phil, where I was saying that if there were any clean vocals at all, these people are just wimpy and I'm not interested in that. I've come back from that. Okay.
Yeah, that was me for a while too.
All right. So I'll put a link up at tomwoods.com/2005 to your site and specifically to the tour page so that we can all be meeting each other. And you know what? You know, you can show up with some kind of Mises tattoo, whatever you need to identify each other. And you're going to have friends at every one of these shows, folks. So, go out and do that.
Don't you have t-shirts that you sell, Tom Woods? Do you not have t-shirts?
You would think I would. I have been meaning to do merchandise. And I have, because I don't know what would be a good, like, I'm ready. I can open a merch store tomorrow. I just
to start the cartoons that you and Malice are doing would be great.
Yeah,
those
I could
would
do
be
that.
Great.
Because I was just thinking, like, if it's just going to be like a shirt with my show logo on it, who wants that?
I think that the stuff that you and Malice, like little scenes from the thing that you and Malice are doing, would be awesome.
I think. Yeah, totally. I hadn't thought of that.
Because they're hilarious. they're really hilarious.
But that would be for like the fans who are really, really into it. Like they actually know me, Malice, the cartoon. You know, that's a niche audience there.
Yeah, but I mean, you've got the audience. You should do it. I mean, it's not like all you got to do is send a JPEG off to like, you know, there's a bunch of print companies, you know?
Yeah, I could use JPEG any of those.
Yeah.
It's great. I just want to know that I've got something clever or a good design and not just the logo on a hat. And if I felt confident about that, I would open a merch store within the week.
Start doing it with the stuff from the little clips there, the little things that you, the shorts.
Yeah,
that you and
that's a smart idea. Yeah, that's and a smart. Even though it makes me look like a, you know, it's not the most flattering depiction of old Woods in those, but it's okay. I'm humble.
It's okay. You should make one of every time that Malice has got you in a dress.
I don't know how me in a dress became a theme of that cartoon. We're talking about the politically incorrect guide cartoon, folks, in case you guys missed it.
If you haven't seen it, you have to go check it out. It's on YouTube. It's Malice and Tom, so you love the content creators. You know they're great. Just go check it out. You'll die.
I encourage people to do that as well. But I'm looking forward to sporting my All That Remains merch, you know, by the time that show's over. So anyway, thank you, Phil, for your time. And I couldn't be happier for you guys that you're hitting the road. I mean, it's well-deserved. And I know you have a great time. You got a lot of people dying to see you. And I'm thrilled for you guys.
Well, I hope to have a very failed tour. So
thanks, Phil. All right, folks, as we wrap up for today, let me remind you that, of course, seeing all the lockdown stuff starting to ramp up again in Europe, which means it's only a matter of time before some of the blue state governors go back to it. All this other stuff and the propaganda about masks and whatever. It's a good time to revisit or visit for the first time if you haven't yet my site, covidchartsquiz.com. So it's covidcharts with an S, quiz.com. And if these things work, it'll be easy for you to pass this quiz where you got to pick out which state is the one that did this and which one did that. And I'll show you the graphs. Or here's a graph of Ohio. I want you to point out where Thanksgiving is on this graph because it was supposed to lead to terrible spikes. So it should be easy to pick out Thanksgiving on the graph. It's all there and you can have your friends try their hand at it. At the very least, in the dark recesses of their minds, they'll have to admit the thing is slightly less cartoonish and more complicated than I thought. So again, the website, covidchartsquiz.com. See you next time.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.